Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be discussing in this episode are the top 300 trade sales through Diamond to retailers December 2013.
December, that's right, John.
I have been looking at so many sets of numbers lately, I have just gone crazy. Because it used to be pretty easy. We'd talk about, the top 25 or whatever trades. It was a really short list, not that big of a deal. Actually, by the time we did it, it was 50 or 100.
50 or 100, yeah. It got big, yeah.
And now it's 300 plus some stragglers below the radar. Plus, they're now up to 400 on the comic side and some items below the radar. And then I was also crunching this weekend the year-end stuff with 1,000 on each side, plus some stuff kind of below the radar. So a lot of numbers.
Now, why doesn't Diamond just do 1,000 a month instead of the capping it like at 300 like they do? Is it just not worth their time?
It's really not that much more time either way. I assume they have this automated, and if not, they should. And if they've got it automated, they've got somewhere saying only show the top X number. So if that number is 300, 400, 500, or 1,000, it really shouldn't make any difference to them.
Mm-hmm.
As for should it go down to 1,000 or not, given that we're already getting down into areas of sales where we're down to, 419 at the end of the top 300? 300 this time. See, I'm already confused. It's 400 on that side, 300 on this side. It's so inconsistent. It would be nice, but I don't know how much serious business justification there would be for that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, I'd like to see it go all the way down to the bottom of everything that's doing movement.
Mm-hmm.
To where we could actually see the kind of the long tail effect on things. But, we get fairly good visibility. They've been good about expanding the list. Again, it used to be 10 items, then 25, then 50, then 100, and then 300. So, yes, I'd like more, but I'm happy with what we've got. I don't feel it's woefully insufficient.
Mm-hmm.
When we were only getting like the top 100, it's like, hey guys, there was a lot that fell below that.
Right, and a lot of those were reorder items. So we weren't getting a lot of the new items coming out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's one of the things that makes the trade list so different than the comic list is just the amount of reorder activity.
Mm-hmm.
We've got just tons and tons of reorder activity this time around. 165 items out of the 313 that I've got on the list.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So it's nice to have the additional stuff. Now, when I crunched the breakdown of it, I did include all 313. At the moment, and granted I've flip-flopped on this a few times, at the moment I'm leaning towards shifting it to just the top 300 on both lists, just for consistency's sake, for doing apples to apples over time. But I haven't decided either way, so if people have an opinion, please let me know and give me some justification either way. This time around, Marvel had a really, really strong month. They had 100 items on the list, giving them 35.92% of the total sales for the top 300 plus a few items below. DC had 22.37% of those sales. Image had 13.8%. IDW, 8.93%. And Dark Horse, another 6.42%. That totals up to 87.44%, leaving the remaining 12.56% split across about 19 other publishers. Now, when I say 300 and change, just to clarify on that, this kind of benefits some of the smaller publishers this time around. Viz and First Second were some of the main recipients. After the top 300, or in addition to that, Diamond releases a couple of other lists, top 50 graphic novels for small and indie, and indie is kind of really the back half. Small includes a few of the other publishers. Often, because of how well these tend to sell and get into the top 300, a large percentage of them are already covered by the top 300, but sometimes I'm able to pull out a couple of additional items. In this case, we go down as far as rank 348, but after 300, we have tons of gaps. I don't know what 301 or 302 were, but I know 303 and 304. So some clarity there. Now, presumably, 301, 302, those were potentially a Marvel, a DC, or some other publisher that wasn't in the scope of that other list.
Mm-hmm.
But as to what item, who knows? It was kind of interesting this time around. Not only did Marvel just have a ton of items on the list, but some of the price points this time around. I know we usually talk about that at the end, but I mean, we had 24 items that were $99.99 or higher.
Yeah, that's huge. That's crazy.
That's crazy huge. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I normally filter the list by the big ticket items, and I get an item or two. This time, it's like, geez, it was again 2 dozen items there. But
well, even the $75 items. I mean, yeah.
Well, that gives us another four if you go down to $74.99, which
right.
You might as well gives another two. So yeah, that's 30 items right there just for big ticket items.
A lot of them were the reorders of the omnibuses. You know, that's primarily what they were, really.
Yeah. Most of this is reorder activity, and the stuff that isn't listed that way on my list, in some cases should be. I mean, one of them that was not was the Villains Omnibus for the New 52 down at rank 104.
Okay.
1,172 units, at, $150. Now, I believe that was the one that covered, all 52 of the Villain Month issues.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Everything else is, wow, that's one of two items at this high ticket end that's DC. The other one is the Just Imagine Stanley Creating the DC Universe down at rank 240. We've got one item from IDW down at rank 187, which is the Walt Simonson Thor Artist Edition. So
that's a second edition, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's funny is that's clearly IDW who put it out, but it's Marvel material.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else on this, the high ticket item side of the list, is Marvel.
Right, yeah.
So they did a really good job getting the reorder activity out there. Tons of omnibuses here. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers Omnibus topping out the list of this section. 3,205 units. The Marvel Zomnibus, 2,968 units. All the way on down to that Fantastic Four John Byrne Omnibus. Reorder activity again, so another 648 units. So, strong month for Marvel, just on that alone.
Did you ever read the Squadron Supreme by Mark Gruenwald?
Oh yeah, loved it.
Did you like it?
Things.
I've been thinking about getting that omnibus.
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, okay.
It is, the Squadron Supreme is essentially the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
They're on an alternate Earth, and they decide to create a utopia. So, it's got a lot of themes that became very popular a decade or two or three later, because this was mid-80s,
mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, superhero overlords of a sort. And he just did some great, great work there. So highly recommend that. That's great stuff.
Yeah, and that's got everything in there, too. So
and
that would be fun.
$74.99, not a bad price.
No, you could probably find it half off somewhere, you know, on DCBS or something like that, too. So.
They also did a trade paperback that didn't have all the extraneous material but had the 12 issues itself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a cheaper version of it, that is an option too.
Mm-hmm. The trade paperback, by the way, the original first run of that had Mark Gruenwald's ashes mixed up into the ink.
Yeah, I've got mixed feelings on that. On the one hand, I think it's cool that he put so much of himself quite literally into his work.
Yeah, literally.
On the other hand, slightly creepy.
It is, and I'm sure they didn't dump the whole urn in the ink.
Hopefully not all at once. That would just jam up the printer or something.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's like when they drew blood from from Kiss to, you know, throw their blood in the ink and all that stuff. It's just, it's a novelty. You know, it's kind of cool.
Well, I had the opportunity to meet Mark Gruenwald because I've been going to San Diego Comic-Con for decades. Obviously, this was long before he passed or whatever. Maybe not long before, but it was before he passed.
Yeah.
Great guy. And this is not, you know, like, hey, put my ashes in there as a stunt or whatever. he you know, lived, ate, slept, you know, drank, you know, whatever, comics just 24/7. He was the epitome of the comic fan, you know, getting into the pro circuit and making good. Tons of respect for him. He was instrumental in things like the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. He oversaw a really long run of Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
He was one that went way, way too young.
He
was late 40s, early 50s, late 40s, I think, when he died.
Something like that, right.
So quite a shame. He had a long career in front of him.
Yeah, he is sorely missed for sure.
But again, even with the holidays and Christmas and all that stuff factoring in, great time for them to get these things back out on the market. But man, that is just a huge chunk of change that was sunk into these things. Because again, normally we have a handful of items that are that price. Now, what's interesting is at the other end of the spectrum, we have a couple of really low-priced items on this, too. We've got, a single item at $4.99 that was a Pokemon Black and White graphic novel at rank $162. And then we've got a few others here that kind of blur the line. One I want to talk about real quick, because Sam and I talked about this a little on the comic side, of where do you draw the line? Is this a trade? Is this a comic? Rank 5. From Marvel Comics, it's $7.99. We've got the Star-Lord Worlds on the Brink, which is a collection of some of the material from, the magazine-sized Marvel stuff. I forget what it was off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now.
But that's something that was presented in comic book format, saddle-stitched. Again, $8 cover price. It was, I'm going to say, 64 pages. It might have been 80 pages. But one that, okay, it's a collection of stuff, so maybe it belongs on this list, but it sure looks like a comic, so maybe it belongs on the other list. And then if you do that, would that shift where things land here or whatever? Ironically, around this exact slot in the list, that one sold 4,242 units, but, you know, the next thing above it was 5,265 with the Deadpool Kills Deadpool trade paperback. On the comic list at rank 318 is Wake Part 1 for $9.99 that collects the first 5 issues of the Wake series. And they call that a special.
Oh, interesting. Huh.
But arguably, you could have taken these two items and flipped them almost.
Yeah.
You know, it really blurs the line as to which belongs where and why. I would have put the Wake over on this list because it is a collection.
Right.
You know, likewise, Star-Lord, frankly, I probably would have put it on the comics list, but I think it is correct to put it here because it too is a collection.
Well, this is the second one, and I recall we talked about this because the first one, the Star-Lord, the Hollow Crown, which came out in June, collected material from Marvel Preview number 4, Marvel Preview number 11, and the Star-Lord Special Edition. And then this one, Worlds on the Brink, collects Marvel Preview 14 and 15 and Marvel Superheroes Special number 10.
Yeah.
So you would think that, I don't know, maybe this summer they're going to collect both of these, you know, quote-unquote trade paperbacks into a full trade paperback and repackage it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So essentially kick them out as if they're comics, then collect them, double dip, triple dip.
And then triple dip. Yep.
Wow.
There you go. Crazy things have happened, you know?
Not a bad plan, because it gets the material out there, it gets it ready to print, and then when the Guardians of the Galaxy movie comes out, have the trade ready for that. Marvel has been very upfront that they're setting up material to be collected and released in time for the various movies, and trying to get some synergy with what's going on over there. You know, the return of Peter Parker timing out for around the time of the next Spider-Man movie, not a coincidence.
Right.
You know, these guys have a plan, and agree with it or not, you know, they have a plan. Got to give them credit for that.
Well, Captain Marvel Masterworks comes out June 11th, so maybe we're going to see a Captain Marvel in the movie. You never know. Wouldn't that be interesting? Or some kind of Kree and Skrulls or something like that?
Well, they had, I had heard at one point the Chitauri or whatever that they used in the Avengers movie was supposed to kind of sort of be the Skrull.
Yes.
Why they didn't just call them the Skrull, I'll never know.
I don't know.
So confusing.
It is.
Topping the list this time around, Fables Volume 19, Snow White, trade paperback, 8,624 units. I think that volume will clearly do more moving forward. The previous one has total known sales of around 12,523 units. So given another couple of months, these things tend to be fairly evergreen for DC. It's going to be interesting to see how the Fables trades do in another year or two once the series ends. Do they stick around? Do they start to fade away? Is this truly evergreen or not? Likewise, that's going to be one of the big tests for Walking Dead. If, you know, decades hence, you know, Kirkman gives up the ghost on that, so to speak, and the monthly series ends, will the trades still have the legs or not? I'm willing to bet they will.
I think they will, but I've got a question for you.
Sure.
You know, AMC is going to do the new Walking Dead spinoff TV show, and I wonder if Kirkman is going to make a comic that follows along, you know, that storyline. Because I, you know, this is just purely rumor and speculation from what I've read, but it sounds like they are going to tackle the early parts of the apocalypse and maybe how it happened and how it affected other parts of the country or maybe other parts of the world. We don't even know, you know, what's going on. And granted, the comics are a different universe than the TV show, as we know. So, you know, thoughts on that? I mean, what do you think?
There would be something just kind of hilarious of that starting as a TV show and then kind of sort of getting adapted into comics.
Yeah.
Just for the almost backwards nature of that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it going either way. I don't know. I mean, it's one thing for the comic to get turned into a TV series. They may need to make changes, whatever. I get that. But to then take a TV show, does it need to be adapted into the comics? And if it's then a different version, you know, I don't know. I can see both ways on that. It might be cool. I don't think it's got to be done. But I would kind of like to see Kirkman take that property and do something in comic format with it, if only for him not to kind of start to flip over from a comic book writer to a TV writer.
Right.
That's probably a more lucrative job for him, but he's done such a phenomenal job with Walking Dead as a comic book that the purist in me would like to see him kind of stay with his roots.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I certainly hope he's not hurting for money with how well things are doing. If he were, then it's like, okay, I can see doing the TV route or whatever first and focusing on that. But yeah, I don't know. It's also going to be interesting to see how many properties he tries to launch over in TV and movies versus doing them as comics first.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. The other thing I'm seeing a lot of push for is kind of almost a relaunch of Invincible with, I think, 111.
Mm.
I'm seeing a lot of ads for that and stuff like that. They don't say a damn thing other than, hey, it's a bold new era. It's like, okay, we'll go with that again. Well, they've done that a time.
It's a great starting point or jumping on point.
They didn't say that, just a bold new era.
Bold new era.
Fine line of distinction there. But yeah. So let's see, what else do we got here that looks interesting? Saga Volumes 1 and 2 ranked 7 and 9 on the list, with Volume 1 doing another 4,165 units, and Volume 2 another 3,570 units. Those continue to be strong sellers for Image. There are quite a few items that are above the 3,000 mark, and we don't get below the 2,000 mark until we get out of the top 40. And somewhere in that range, depending how many stores are really out there, we get below the average of one copy per store.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that in and of itself is a bit of a myth, in so much as I'm sure there are listeners out there who've gone to a store and seen items well below this on the list and seen more than one copy at their store. So, I mean, we know not every store is getting everything.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we've got 300 items on the list. I would hope every store is not getting everything. They're going to run out of space if they do. Rank 48 surprises me a little, because we've got reorder activity for the Marvel Point One trade paperback, 1,922 units. This was the stuff from the various Point One issues, I think back in, looks like 2010 and earlier. That seems like an odd thing to have such strong sales at this point. I think they have relaunched pretty much every one of these titles a time or two since these Point Ones. Matter of fact, looking over it, I am certain they've relaunched every one of those titles at least once since then.
Yeah, I'm sure they have, right.
So I don't know what's going on with that. That just confuses me.
Well, especially with the new Daredevil getting relaunched by the same creative team. I think that's kind of odd.
This is something, and I'm going to keep beating the drum on this, I don't think it's odd, I think it's bad.
Well, yeah.
I think Marvel in particular is training readers to not jump onto new titles at any point other than the first issue. And I think that is going to come back and haunt them.
But you mentioned at one point, and this is a couple of years ago, that what if Marvel or DC or whoever, you know, were to do 12 issue seasons and just, you know, here's your 2012 edition and here's your 2013 and 2014 and so on.
Well, and that's kind of sort of what they're doing.
Kinda. Mm-hmm.
But the emphasis is more on the, hey, it's a brand new number one.
Mm-hmm.
Jump on here. And the fallacy I see with that approach, which goes along with the Point Now, the Point One, and a few of their other initiatives, is you're training people to not pick stuff up except for select jumping on points.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the first issue is going to be the high watermark, which it is already. People aren't going to jump on unless there's a creative team change. They might not even jump on if there's just a new story arc. Because if that were a big deal, they'd give it a new number one in theory.
Mm-hmm.
So it lowers sales, it shortens longevity of titles, and that's just bad both on the comic side and on the trade side. And it goes from having a sense of a timeline and a continuity, which I think is one of the big strengths of The Walking Dead. You can kind of get on board almost anywhere. Certainly, certain issues are better jumping on points than others,
mm-hmm.
but none are clearly not. Just don't even think about jumping on here.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a through line of continuity and story and plot from issue one all the way to the current issue. And yeah, there are different eras of the book, the prison era, the governor arc, the, you know, this, that, and the other or whatnot, where things change over time, but not, you hit the end of an arc, it's over, it's done, new creative team, and it's as if it's a new start. With TV seasons, it's a little bit different because of the need for reruns and some stuff like that. They can only do so many episodes a year. It's a different cadence
mm-hmm.
than comics have, where it's a once a month, usually. I mean, obviously Marvel's going faster than that in some places. Other comics are going slower than that. But if they got to where it's just, hey, here's the 2014 season of comics or whatever, it is a jumping on point, but in theory so is any other comic, I would be much more okay with that. But the let's cancel Daredevil and relaunch it. Let's end Fantastic Four and relaunch it. Let's end, you know, whatever other title and relaunch it.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like a measure of desperation and a forced marketing ploy versus actually shoring up the readability, the accessibility, the stickiness of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gotten to the point where if you got somebody a trade paperback and they loved it, 9 times out of 10, I don't think there is a very clear what's the next story for them to naturally go into.
Right.
You know, there's not that timeline, there's not that continuity there. And I think that's just horrible. Anytime you train the readers to basically ignore your title except for, you know, once, maybe twice a year, you've got to expect to lose sales the rest of the time. And so much of this is getting geared towards packaging it for the collected edition. And in a lot of these cases, the collected edition is not doing gangbusters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of these pop up. We got a lot of reorder activity, but even some of these things we've got reorder activity on, like that Marvel Point One, probably a bad example, but it's less than 3,000 units total. What would be another good example of just some kind of middle of the road book, midstream or whatever? Superboy, Volume 3, Lost, from the New 52. It did 1,584 units down at rank 69. We may never see that on the list ever again. And if we do, it's not going to build up to sales that really fundamentally matter.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they were to tell stories that didn't have Part 1 through 6, stop, reset, Part 1 through 6, stop, reset, I think sales would be better just both on the trades and on the single issues.
I do like the way that Marvel and, to an extent, Valiant have staggered their titles coming out. You know, with the Point Ones, they didn't all release them like, you know, New 52, all 52 titles in 1 month
mm-hmm.
and keep going. I do like that, you know, hey, let's, you know, yes, we have, you know, 60-plus comics in our catalog, but those 60 we're going to be relaunching over the point of the next 6 months or so. And Valiant having, like, one title 1 month and then, you know, a new number one with the ongoing title and so on and so on and so on. That's done very well for Valiant, I think. And now they're getting into their, and we talk a lot mm-hmm. of Valiant these past few months. But now they're getting into their mini crossovers like a Unity or something like that. And they're, you know, relaunching Bloodshot with Bloodshot and the Hardcore, that kind of thing. They're kind of in their groove 2.5 years into it now. But, yeah, I still think, and we've talked about this at length before, you know, launching all 52 titles really, really hurt DC, I think. Because it was just hard to catch up with everything.
It made for a really strong month, and the other 2 months that were really strong for them were ones that were essentially done-in-one issues.
Mm-hmm.
The Zero Month and the Villains Month.
Right.
And just in January, Marvel has, for new number ones, Avengers World, Black Widow, All New Invaders, All New X-Factor. They've got the Point Now issues of All New X-Men, Guardians of the Galaxy, Thunderbolts, Savage Wolverine, Avengers AI. So, I mean, there's at least a new number one every week at Marvel.
Right.
And is it better to have these staggered? On the one hand, yes. On the other hand, if every week there's always a new number one, you know, where do they start knocking other titles off people's pull lists?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's going to be an Amazing Spider-Man number one coming up, too. We know that.
Yeah. I've started tracking all the stuff I'm getting every week, which, I mean, I've been tracking it before, but I'm starting to actually rate all those items just because it was a pain in the butt for me to organize my thoughts for the year-end stuff. And already I've got, just counting the first two shipments of 2014, I have, out of the 104 comics I've gotten, 12 titles have started, 13 have ended, and one started and ended. So the amount of churn I've got just
which one was that?
I counted the all-new Point One.
Okay.
Any one-shot will fall into that, as will any mini-series.
I thought it was canceled after one issue.
No, I said ended. I didn't say canceled. But I'm averaging about six new number ones a week already. That's a lot.
That's crazy.
Now, granted, I read more than the average bear or whatever. I get that. But the fact that there are that many out there for me to be getting is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I really think the publishers, Marvel in particular, are turning comics into a churn-based kind of a market. And it's interesting because if you compare that with DC, aside from Forever Evil and its three associated miniseries, DC has really not done much in the New 52 at all with miniseries over the last couple of years. And which made figuring out what my favorite miniseries from them was for the year really hard because there weren't many.
Mm-hmm.
But Marvel is doing so many of those and restarting so many titles that I am not confident that the majority of titles that were on, say, the year-end top seller list or whatever from 2012 are on the 2013 list or will be on the 2014 list, at least the same volume of those titles. And I think that level of churn on titles and such, it gets the readers to the point where if the publishers don't care about it, why should they?
Mm-hmm.
And add to that the branding issues around how they're packaging trade paperbacks and such. You know, you look at, the Grant Morrison run of New X-Men is volumes one through whatever. You know, you look at the different eras of Daredevil by, you know, creative team. You get new volume ones all over the place. I can easily see somebody not realizing that, picking up volume one by one creator, picking up volume two by another creator, not realizing it's a completely different era of that character, and getting kind of confused and turned off.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think that the publishers need to take a look through the eyes of the readers at how this is playing out and care a little bit more about how they're packaging up their stuff. Because I'm not seeing stellar sales on some of these things. Only three items on the top comics list this time were over 100,000.
What were they?
They were
Superior, probably.
Nope. Origin 2, number one.
Oh, you know, you and Drew went through that. I wasn't really impressed with that book.
I can understand that. I thought it was shallow. I thought it was lacking serious substance.
Yeah.
The number two item was Avengers 24 Point Now.
I read that. That was okay.
Sam's take on that is people are going to realize it's not a new number one and be unamused. And I think he's right.
Yeah.
And then the next, the only other one over the 100,000 was Batman number 26. And it's the only one of the three I think is sustainable sales.
Zero issue, 0 year or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, 0 year. But even Forever Evil is ducked below 100,000.
Hmm.
So I think, and December was an odd month. Because out of the four Wednesdays, there were five release weeks and four shipments. The week of Christmas was not a shipping week, but there were releases on Christmas Eve Day. Likewise, stuff that would have been released in January was released on New Year's Eve Day. But I think only a total of six comics and maybe four trades were released the week of Christmas, and Marvel released very little the following week.
I have on December 24th, according to Comic List, Dark Horse shipping Star Wars Omnibus Knights of the Old Republic Volume 2, Conan Volume 14, The Death, and Boom Studios released Fairy Quest Volume 1, Outlaws, and that is it. And as far as Marvel goes, the next week, they had a couple good ones.
Well, hang on. On the 24th, you had the Avengers 24.0 and Origin 2 number 1 for Marvel, right?
I'm just looking at the trades.
Oh, just the trades. Just
yeah,
the trades.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
The trades. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. There.
So
we,
I
yeah.
just had the three, the two from Dark Horse and the one from Boom. That's all. But then on the 31st, there's the good one, Deadpool by Joe Kelly Omnibus came out.
Mm-hmm.
Avengers Volume 2, Infinity Premiere Hardcover. Avengers AI Volume 1, Human After All. West Coast Avengers, Sins of the Past Trade. And the prose novel of Iron Man, Extremis.
Marvel released as many trades that week as they did single issues.
Yeah.
And you could toss the prose in there as a tiebreaker, depending, you know?
Yeah. And then Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve, IDW had a bunch. I mean, it was almost like a normal day for a lot of the other publishers.
For most of the publishers, it was a normal week, except for Marvel, which was unusually light.
Yeah, very light.
Mm-hmm. So it was a little bit of an odd week.
Well, and what's odd, you know, it was December 31st, and then the next shipping date was actually January 8th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, just kind of odd the way that the calendar worked out.
Well, that's part of why when I do the year-end stuff, I always feel obligated to count that last week.
Yeah.
Because nobody's going to count whatever was released on New Year's Eve as part of the 2014 stuff. Yeah.
Well, even Christmas Eve, no one's going to ship on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
It's just odd, you know?
What was funny was that when the solicits were originally done, the 25th and January 1st were both regular shipping weeks.
Were both shipping dates, right? I remember that.
Like, what's up with that? Nobody noticed?
I don't think anybody's going to work that day.
So.
I got something for you.
Sure.
DC released the trade paperback. It's kind of like a greatest hits, Superman versus Mongol. Coming in at one rank 138, it was for $14.99 and did 928 units.
Mm-hmm.
And this was released. Oh, I just had it. Oh, shit.
The 18th.
The 18th. There we go. Oh, there it is. Okay, so this collected DC Comics Presents 27, 28, 36, 43, and the ever popular Superman Annual number 11. Now, that's the issue I want to talk about, John, because as you know,
mm-hmm.
anytime DC can reprint this annual, they do so.
Yes.
And it comes up every couple years. And I just looked at it while you were talking a minute ago. Not only, and this is done by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. I mean, it's a fantastic story. It's one of the greatest Superman stories ever written, if not the best one. And it was even originally, what got this whole reprint engine going was probably Justice League Unlimited. In the second episode, it was animated for The Man Who Has Everything, and Robin was actually replaced by Batman and Wonder Woman. They just kind of wrote him out of the story. And that's a Jason Todd Robin, by the way. But since then, it has been released a number of times. It seems like every 3 years. It was released Across the Universe, the DC Universe stories of Alan Moore in Aught 3, and then again in an expanded Alan Moore book in 2006, and then again the same year, just 4 months later, Superman in the 80s trade paperback. And then it was collected again in Superman, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, the Deluxe Edition hardcover in 2009. And now we get it again here in Superman versus Mongol. So it's one of those stories. I guess it's an evergreen story that gets republished every couple of years. So
it is one of the hallmark Superman stories.
It is.
It was brilliant and such. There are a few others that I thought had similar aspects, yet don't seem to get quite that respect. There was one in one of the annuals, The Sword of Superman, that I thought was really good and stuff like that. But yeah, that one story with the what's the name of the flower? The Mercy Rose or whatever?
The Rose, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain ubiquitousness of the story. I can understand that. I think it's interesting some of the other stories they collected in the Superman vs. Mongol, going back to the DC Comics Present stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that was great stuff. I really wish they would reprint more of the DC Comics Presents. I just loved that.
Well, they did the showcase.
True. I like my comics
nice
in color.
I know. Me too.
I wish they could get that kind of rotating team-up kind of a book working these days.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been ages since we've really seen one of those that was firing on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. They tried Brave and the Bold a couple of years back. I'm trying to think the last time. Well, you could argue the superior Spider-Man team-up book right now over at Marvel is kind of a rotating team-up book, too.
Well, they did that with New 52. They did the DC Presents with, who was in it, Deadman. And
that wasn't a team-up book, and that was just a series of miniseries.
It was a series of miniseries. Yeah, right. So, and it didn't last very long.
Or did 18 issues?
Yeah.
Thereabouts, yeah. I would just
wasn't
like to...
Challengers in that, too?
Yeah, Challengers were in there. Vandal Savage and his daughter were in there. Challengers of the Unknown. Dead Man. Kid Flash for an issue.
Okay.
And some of the characters from Red Hood and the Outlaws.
That's right.
I would just like to see them take a viable anchor character, or two or three, and rotate in other characters that have just kind of drifted off into limbo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ray, some of the other Freedom Fighter characters,
yeah.
Dial H, Resurrection Man, Static, characters like that.
I'm still waiting for that quality trade paperback of the Ray and Doll Man.
Mm-hmm. Phantom Lady.
None of that has been collected yet. I just don't know what they're waiting for. Maybe they don't think it's going to sell, but...
But at that point, it's got to be ready to print, because...
Yeah.
I can't imagine them producing anything in this era that's not.
Right.
At which point, the cost of the cover and the production intern or whoever, and it's probably a full-fledged professional, I don't mean to insult anyone of the sort. I mean, really, a day of their time, and you've got the trade. That seems like such a worthwhile investment, even if it doesn't shoot through the roof.
Right.
It gets the revenue stream out there.
Yes.
I am surprised they haven't collected that.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, those were some of the few miniseries they did. Add to that the Eternity and the other couple of one-shots they did.
Madam X.
Rose and Thorn,
yep.
I forget what the fourth one was.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, those are good.
That stuff that... that they've put out there in the New 52, and it's over and forgotten with, unfortunately, at this point. Getting the trades out there give these characters a little longer life, and there's a lot to be said for that. So
yeah, you're better off maybe, you know, buying them and binding them yourself, because I don't think they're going to be collecting anytime soon. That's a shame.
Yeah. Well, and I think they need a better exit strategy when they end titles, because, again, some of these characters, just poof, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And... if you've got an audience for them of any way, shape, or form, and you're simply abandoning that audience, that doesn't garner goodwill.
Mm-hmm.
That just seems short-sighted, and there's got to be something better that can be done on that. It's funny, because it's a shame that anthology books just don't sell, because that's the sort of thing you could take some of those characters, just do 8-page stories of 10 of them, and do it as an 80-page giant or whatever.
I think, right, they're not selling for DC and Marvel, but I think... Dark Horse does it right with their Dark Horse Presents. That sells well.
Does it?
I think
You know I'm trying to go pull that
you're
up
looking
right
it
now.
Up. I know you're looking it up, but I just hear buzz about it on other podcasts and other, you know, blog reviews. But then you also have, like, Hellboy showing up in these. So you've got, like, title characters that kind of carry this book one to the next. So maybe it would be smart for DC to do it and have, you know, a Scott Snyder Batman... or a, you know, something of that caliber, a, you know, short story to carry it month to month.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
on the comics list at rank 291, Dark Horse Presents number 31, 5,358 units. Much further down, and it would have dropped below the top 300.
Mm-hmm. But 31 issues in, that's pretty good.
That's true.
You know, that's better than DC Comics Presents with Deadman and everybody. That would be an interesting sales. To see how the contrast in sales with those numbers. Maybe we can do that for next month.
Actually, if you give me a sec, I will...
Or we could do it for the year end.
DC Universe Presents. I've got a spreadsheet I use for building my charts and such. All right, so what's going on those two? Let me filter out years that they're not in.
Because that just recently ended, didn't it? I mean, 18 issues, it probably would have ended early 2013.
Yeah, April 2013.
April, okay.
So DC Universe Presents started a little below 50,000, and I've got it at, what do I have here? Come on. 48,532 units. Quickly dropped below 40,000 down to 37,429 on the second issue. 27,914 on the third. Started a more gradual decline. Getting into the 15,000-ish range until it was settling in around 12,000. Dipped a little below that. Ended at 12,443 units. With a high point, an upward point, I should say, not a high point. It obviously dropped quite a bit. At 17,526 units in September of 2012, that was probably the zero issue. On the other hand, going back to April of 2011 for Dark Horse Presents, that started at 15,107. Now keep in mind, DC Universe Presents was what, a $2.99 book? Yeah.
Probably.
Dark Horse Presents, $7.99.
Okay.
You're going to have lower sales.
Yeah.
Just going to happen. It dropped below 10,000 down to a little under 9,000 in September of 2011 and had pretty much been on a steady decline, steady but slow decline, because it was staying around the 8,000 mark into early 2012. By the second half of 2012, it was down 7,000 or under, drifting down towards around 5,000 at the beginning of 2013, and staying steady-ish, going down to 4,500-ish over the course of the year. So below where DC Universe Presents was, but not too surprising, and really a shallower decline. So I think that is working better for them. I wouldn't say it's, you know, top of the charts or whatever, because Dark Horse had nearly 2 dozen items above it on the list. And again, it barely made the top 300. But I think that kind of a model for an anthology makes sense. Do some shorter stories. If it looks good and you want to spin it off, reprint those as a zero issue, launching the miniseries or something. Dark Horse has done that to good effect with Captain Midnight, Resident Alien, a couple of other things that I've picked up. So it can work. The question is, can you get enough anchor items for people to pay the price tag and not grumble about it too much? And that can be challenging. But I think if you were to use that kind of an anthology at Marvel or DC as kind of a backbone book, put in, you know, at DC, like you said, a Scott Snyder Batman story, a Superman story, or, you know, whichever character, Justice League or whatever, you know, some stuff by Jeff Johns or something that people would consider must-read material over at Marvel.
If you do the Marvel stuff side, you'd have to have Wolverine in it. I mean, God, he was in the old Marvel Comics Presents like every issue, I think.
You have Wolverine, you have some Avengers stuff, you have something by Bendis.
Throw in a Black Widow.
Yeah.
Throw in a Silver Surfer.
That's something, though, where some of those characters could be getting some play, building up an audience before launching them into their own book.
Right.
And having read, speaking of Silver Surfer, having read the all-new Marvel Now...
I have to pick that up. I'm interested in that.
Are you a fan of Doctor Who?
Kinda, yeah.
Do you want that take on Silver Surfer?
I like a Silver Surfer.
Do you want the Doctor Who take on Silver Surfer?
Well, I'll read it, and I'll let you know.
What I read, replace the TARDIS with the surfboard.
Yeah.
Replace the word doctor with Harold. He looks a little different. He doesn't regenerate, but it's very much he goes to the planet, ooh, it's him kind of a thing.
Okay.
He's now got the companion.
Yeah.
It read like it was the Doctor Who riff on the character.
Hmm.
And that's not the character. So I'm...
Did you and Drew review that?
No. Okay. The point one?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Okay. I will check
because you've got me curious now. I know I've read it. I don't think we reviewed it. No, we did not review it. Good. I'd have felt bad if we did, and I'd totally forgotten that, which I reserve the right to do. It has me cautiously skeptical on how that book's going to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, Allred's doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he's a great artist and stuff. To me, the story is where I've got worries.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Black Widow, Silver Surfer, these are characters that have been around the block before. A lot of the things we're getting out of Marvel and out of DC are retreads.
Mm-hmm.
There's safety in the familiar or whatever, but that hasn't been working overly well for them either.
Mm-hmm.
So, we shall see how all of that does. What else do we have that looks interesting?
Well, I found something, and I was kind of curious because I've never heard of this company before, but coming in at rank 207 from New England is Watson and Holmes, Volume 1, A Study in Black. It's $16.99, trade paperback, and did 607 units. And I looked it up real quick.
It's actually from New Paradigm Studios.
Oh, New Paradigm. Oh, yeah, okay.
I have read this story arc.
You did?
I got the issues.
Well, tell me about it, because it looks very interesting.
This is one that is set in, and Drew and I reviewed the first issue, actually, in Weekly Comics Spotlight, I'm going to say 310.
Okay, I'll go back
a couple months back.
Yeah.
It's set in Harlem, in New York City and such. It's an African-American take on the Sherlock Holmes mythology or whatever. Modern day stuff, a little bit more urban or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different take on the characters. It stays true to the classic stuff, but is a very new and interesting interpretation that I think is, it's funny because I think between the Sherlock series on the BBC, Elementary, here in the States,
mm-hmm.
The Robert Downey Jr. movies and such, there's a lot of Sherlock Holmes stuff going around.
Right.
And I really enjoyed this. I thought it was a different enough take to not overlap, even with the Elementary stuff taking place in New York. And I'm curious to see where they go with it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who wants an alternate take on Sherlock Holmes, this is worth reading. You know, is it the best Sherlock Holmes stuff I've ever read? No. Is it worth checking out if you're into that kind of stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. There's definitely a revival of Sherlock going on right now. For the past mm-hmm. couple of years there have been, you know.
It was something that was coming out. It looked interesting in previews. I gave it a shot. I liked it enough to stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Drew,
you read all five?
I've read all five.
Okay.
Drew did not like it enough to stay with it.
Oh, okay.
So, but I'm trying to keep an eye out for stuff that I'm not reading, just to not that I need to expand my reading list. But
I was gonna say,
it happens sometimes. So,
well, I'm gonna check that one out for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything you want to mention?
We've covered a lot of it. A lot of the stuff that fell below 300 was stuff from Viz or Oni Press or First Second or whatever. Only a handful of items, ranging from 415 units down to 364 units. Again, nice to get the extra visibility, but nothing that really made me think, oh, wow, I'm so glad we had it.
Well, I'm looking at the list, and the last new trade that's not a reorder is 296, coming at 296, the Thunder Agents Classics Volume 2 trade paperback. And you know my love for Thunder Agents.
Mm-hmm.
$29.99, which is awfully expensive for this type of trade paperback. This should have been $17.99 at best.
Yeah.
And, you know, 423 units. Just, boy, you know, how are the numbers for the regular series? Can you pull that up real quick and compare that to give it the old litmus test, I guess?
Sure.
Because I don't, you know, there's no action on the message boards. No one's talking about this stuff. And I feel really bad because, you know, every couple of years people try to kickstart this series up again with their own take and it just doesn't fly. And,
well, this is
the
third volume of Thunder Agents we've gotten in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And this is doing 3,788 units, which, you know, isn't horrible, but isn't brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can pull up a list real fast of the other volumes.
Or the DC volume?
The DC volumes.
Yeah.
The problem with those is they started to fall under the radar. And they were doing, the first one started in 2010, 10,602 units, drifted down to 8,453 units. The next volume launched 10,736 units, and I lost sight of it down just under 5,300 units.
Nick Spencer was running that for a while.
Yeah, he was doing some great stuff. I really loved it. I think it's a better run, frankly, than what IDW is doing now.
I hate to say, I think you're right.
I don't think what IDW's doing now is bad. I just think Spencer's stuff was better. But, you know, I think it's switching to different publishers, it being yet another volume and kind of a new restart. I think people get tired of that. You know, why bother to get invested in a property if it's just going to keep rebooting? You know, that goes back to my concerns with all the relaunches and stuff, particularly over at Marvel and whatnot. But it's not just them. IDW, Dynamite, some of these other properties or publishers are doing it too. Dynamite, I think, is about to basically shelve all the Bionic Man stuff they're doing and do a season 6 stuff, essentially scuttling the continuity they've been dealing with the last couple of years. Golly, why get invested in that, you know? But, you know, we'll see how that goes.
I just read of a new Flash Gordon series coming out.
By who?
God, I just read it right before we started recording.
I really enjoyed the one by Dynamite.
Yeah.
Was that Flash Gordon or was that Buck Rogers?
Buck Rogers.
I'm thinking Buck Rogers. And I've been reading the one over at Hermes Press by Chaykin.
Okay.
And I really liked the other one. We'll just go with that. but yeah, there are a couple of those properties that Flash Gordon, I would hope that would be over at
Jeff Parker.
IDW?
With Dynamite.
With Dynamite?
Yes.
Where's King's Watch right now?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
Because that's the one where the character's currently showing up, isn't it?
I believe so. Dynamite proudly announces that writer Jeff Parker will continue the science fiction thrills in Flash Gordon number one and now new ongoing series with Evan Shaner.
King's Watch is over at Dynamite. Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So there we go. New Flash Gordon. Covers are out on CBR right now. So... it'll be in the February previews catalog, slated for release April 9th, 2014. Boy, they got a ton of covers on here.
That doesn't surprise me.
So, yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It's coming from Dynamite.
well, from almost any publisher these days. It's getting to where first issue sales, because of the plethora of covers, are almost worthless.
Yep.
In terms of how is the title doing and such like that. Is that title spinning out of King's Watch?
You know, it doesn't. I'm just kind of... Doesn't really say. I'm sure more news will come about it tomorrow.
Over on the comic side, Dynamite had 4 items on the list over 10,000. Legendary Steampunk Adventure at 27,174. Twilight Zone at 21,723. Doc Savage at 13,631. And Red Sonja at 13,291. Red Sonja was issue 6. The other 3 were all first issues. Most of their stuff is under 10,000 these days.
Okay.
So I think Dynamite is in a position of kind of needing to reestablish itself to a certain degree.
So the press release says, slated to debut April 2014, Flash Gordon marks the 80th anniversary of the science fiction or the fictional icon, follows Parker's critically acclaimed King's Watch miniseries, and includes the beloved cast, yada, yada, yada. So there you go. It is spinning out of King's Watch.
That kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, well, we talked about the price points already and how it was a bit of an expensive month and stuff all the way around. Not really anything else I can think of worth talking about. We covered quite a bit of ground this time around. A lot of good stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how the year-end numbers look and how things look going into 2014. So anything else? Does that do it?
I think that'll do it, man. What's coming up on your show?
Let's see. Bunch of episodes talking about the numbers, funny enough. just did last week the previews last week or the week before, depending when I actually get this up. The previews spotlight had a ton of great submissions and stuff. Really enjoying that. Hope people keep sending stuff in. Really, those episodes succeed or fail based on listener participation. I'm going to chime in with a couple of things, but, you know, this is how I find out about new things, too. Did the year-end, the yearly comic spotlight, that was...
And you picked Astro City. I knew you would pick Astro City.
Does that surprise you at all?
No. You said that when it came out, that was going to be your book of the year.
Yeah. That was when I was picking, going through the stuff, I feel obligated to pull up a list of everything I've gotten for the year and actually think it through and give thought to stuff at the beginning of the year, not just whatever is hot at the moment at the end. And there are a couple of things that sometimes it's easy to forget or whatnot. But yeah, there are a few that where it's like book of the year from DC. Gosh, that's tough. Astro City 2, done. You know, but there are a couple others. It was hard to figure out Rising Star and some stuff like that. in a few categories across Marvel, DC, other. So what I'm doing this year, as I've mentioned a few times in various podcasts, I've got a spreadsheet I'm using to track and review everything I'm reading. Now, when I'm reading stuff that I'm not talking about on the show, it's, you know, I get done reading, oh, what the hell, let's give it a 3 or 4. It's a faster, looser kind of a rating. And if somebody were to push really, you know, is that what you think? Or if I were to actually pull out some talking points and think about it some more, that could influence my rating up or down a little. But that'll give me some data points to work with, pre-aggregated versus having to go do that at the last minute. And then of course, you know, been doing a lot of number crunching lately. So we've got, this episode, the corresponding December 1 for the comic stuff that I've recorded with Sam already. Gonna do another round with Sam on the year end stuff. Another one with you on the year end trade stuff. And then still got the weekly comic spotlight coming out like clockwork. Drew and I on the next one are going to talk about Injustice Year 2 number 1, Miracle Man number 1, and Illegitimates number 2.
Who's Illegitimates by?
That is by IDW.
Okay.
And the concept there is the equivalent of James Bond has been killed.
Oh, wow.
And they need somebody with similar skills. So he's been around for a while, and like James Bond, was a little promiscuous, so they get his illegitimate kids they've been keeping an eye on for the last few decades and kind of subtly training and coaching and recruit them. So it's an interesting concept. We'll see how well it pulls together with the second issue.
Huh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah. So it's a fun idea, and one that, you know, frankly, almost writes itself to a certain degree if you take that aspect of James Bond to a, you know, more logical conclusion or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So got that stuff. What else? That's a lot of it. You know, more weekly comic spotlight and whatnot. Yeah. How about you? What's going on your show?
Well, I just did my podcast that I pick, my artist or creator of the year that I want to follow. And this year I, did two. I'm going to follow and read more up on, Namor the Submariner.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I'm not going to really go back and do his Golden Age stuff. I'm going to start with his Atlas Age stuff and then move into the Silver Age. I think that'll be kind of good. And then I'm also going to reread the classic Valiant material.
Oh, good call.
And I got the 4 Valiant Masters, and that's probably going to be my next podcast. I'm going to focus on the Valiant Masters and then probably go over the Submariner Masterworks. Kind of like, you know, the extras involved in that, a little bit more on the character. I think that'll be pretty a lot of fun. But speaking of anthologies, my best of the year, John, was the Solo Deluxe Edition hardcover that came out last year. And talking about something that DC did right many, many years ago, you know, a lot of issues were up for Eisner's, couple issues won Eisner's, and that was a really good way to go. And you're right, something like that is sorely missed in this day and age. And it proves that it can be done, because, damn it, they want Eisner's for it, you know?
It can be done, but can it sell?
Right.
And I say that as somebody who did not buy, a single issue of that series.
Mm-hmm.
If at most I bought a single issue of that series. So, it's something that can be done, should be done. Doing it, making it marketable and stuff, it's tricky. You know, it's certainly not easy.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
Yeah, but that's what I got.
Awesome. Anything else? Does that do it then?
No, that'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust.
All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust and needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Athlogic and English language itself seem to work very differently there.